Hello, my name is Francis Pinder, and you are watching or listening to the Salesforce Posse podcast, where I speak to Salesforce industry influencers so that we can gain a better understanding of how to excel in a career path from a Salesforce admin or developer to an architect. Although that's what I normally say. But this conversation is a little bit different because my guest isn't massively influential in the Salesforce ecosystem, but he is in his own world of omni-channel customer experiences. He's an author, a podcaster, and a futurist, and I've known him for many years, and he is Noz Urbina, founder of Urbina Consulting and the Omnichannel X Conference. He's a master of designing omnichannel experiences for organizations, and I wanted to pick his brains because when I receive requirements or scopes of work to build omnichannel experiences in Salesforce, I want to know that I'm designing the best solution and I'm asking the right questions so my clients get the best value. But also, I know that omnichannel is more than just routing leads and cases. So if you're interested in finding out what omnichannel really is and how it differs from a multi-channel architecture, or the importance of taxonomies and understanding when an organization really has no idea what they're asking and what questions to ask them back, or some fabulous tips on things that you can bring up at these meetings to make you look like an omnichannel rock star, then I think you're gonna get an awful lot of value out of this conversation with Noz. So without further ado, let's go. So hello, Noz Urbina. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Francis. Glad to be happy to be here.
You're not based in the UK, are you? You're based out in?
In Valencia, Spain.
There's Spain. I knew it was Spain. I've just got back from Denmark and it's been very cold, but I'm assuming it's a lot warmer out there at the moment than it is in Denmark.
Well, actually, I just got back from the Canary Islands.
Oh, no way! Brilliant.
So it was even warmer still. So now I'm back in Spain going, it's a little fresh.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for being on the show. I wanted to get you on the show because you are what I think of as the kind of the person around, you know, omni-channel customer engagement and that whole kind of piece around, although not so much in the Salesforce world, but kind of in the wider world. Before we start, could you give a little bit of a potted understanding of what we talk about kind of when we talk about omni-channel and what that means kind of within the world?
Yeah. Yeah, so omnichannel has gone up. Like if you ask Google Trends, you can see the line. It's been a decade. So it's been a decade since a little bit more than I started talking about it. And in that time, it's just gone, I think it's like 1,000%, or I don't know how you calculate it. It's gone from like zero. So it's like infinite percent increase in the past 10 years. And so what we mean by omnichannel is opposed to multi-channel, cross-channel, et cetera, has to do with an attitude and a perspective of how you run your initiative. So omnichannel was very much about getting the same thing out or enabling equal experience or transaction across your channels. And they started to talk about in cross-channel, like a little bit about channel handoffs and the idea that like, you could pick up a task and finish it on another device, and that's fine. That's all well and good, and that's necessary. Like you have to do cross-channel. You have to be able to hand up cross-channels. You need to do multi-channel. You have to be able to deliver at least a good experience on all the channels that are going to be used. But it is omni-channel. It's that next level of thinking of going, how does all of this add up to an experience? So rather than going, have we verified that we have equivalent compatibility or equivalent experience on the app versus mobile versus in-store or whatever, whatever your channel is and however you define equivalency, rather than ticking all the boxes that, I could engage this way, what does it all add up to? Are they helping each other? You know, are we facilitating?
Rather doing it in siloed kind of experiences. Yeah.
Exactly. Rather than saying I've optimized because this thing ticks all the boxes, how does the whole add up to something more than the sum of its parts? Yeah. So we talk about bringing together content, design, governance, and systems, which is probably a good topic for this show, because, you know, we have to bridge those worlds. The only reason that you're connecting with a channel is for content. If you don't put a design around it, it's not going to work. If you don't have a system, it can't operate or scale. And if you don't govern it, it's all going to collapse 5 minutes after you set it up.
Big heap.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show is kind of like, I think when we look at it in the kind of the Salesforce world, it's kind of very much a technology driven. You get that this is what we want. Okay, go and do it. But I think as architects and as admins and developers, it's kind of like, well, how do I know I'm doing it right? And what does right mean? Yeah, exactly. And am I giving the maximum value I can in building this kind of experience, I suppose, across multi-channel? Or is it just literally, am I right asking the right question?
You're asking the right question. So it's sort of my background as well. I did come more from a tech background originally. I was working in product. And I kind of moved into consultancy. The best place you can be is in that middle ground where you understand the tech and you can apply the tech and you can speak to technical people, but you are also understanding the why behind the tech and you can engage with the stakeholders that are asking things of technical people, because that's where most of the miscommunications, most of the project failures that I've seen happen, because you need to bridge that gap to define use cases, goals, and purpose in order to create good solutions. And what the transition for me was when I started to push back, even when I was selling. When you go away from being a salesperson or a sales engineer to being a consultant, it's when you start to question. And I would say for your listeners, this is also incredibly important for your career, because if you do what you are told successfully on time, on budget, that's fine. And you will get some promotions and raises and all that good stuff. But if you want your career to take off, and if you want to become an architect and be, you know, respected as that role of with the other stakeholders, you have to be an active value added participant, not a good executor of instructions, but a good participant in a team that's making the whole team function better. And that means asking questions. That means knowing when someone brings you requirements, where there might be gaps, where there might be things that they haven't thought about, asking validation questions, clarifying questions, ROI questions. Like, what are you trying to get out of this? I understand you're asking me to accomplish this, but if I will do a better job of it, if you can kind of show me what your business case is, what your purpose is in doing this, you'll appreciate that.
Yeah. And I think the classic I get is like, you get a solution given to you. it's like, we want this done in Salesforce. And you're like, well, actually, why, you know, and start really. And that's where the value can come. You know, actually, there's all this other stuff that you don't know about that may actually give you more value. And without kind of asking those questions and kind of digging under the carpet a little bit to find out what the real problem or what they're really trying to solve, you can't kind of build that, you know, really great solution. And I think, again, another kind of problem I think we come across is this kind of lift and shift. It's like, we just want to do this and plonk down. And it's like, you just lose all the value. And it might be really hard to do as well. But if we did it this slightly other way, you get a better experience and better value and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think where we cross over, where, you know, yours and my world really cross over is on the R word. We talk about customer relationship management. Omnichannel is the long game. You know, it's not about pushing out the page or the PDF or the app or whatever. It's not about launching the content. It's about building the relationship using the channels over time. And what I'm getting more and more in my projects is we're trying to do more personalization, but in how do you do personalization and relevance in ways that actually add value? So it's so many these like a top-down pressure where people are like, okay, we got to do personalized content. And they do not know what that actually involves. And so what ends up happening is this really superficial stuff, like you're changing a couple background graphics, you're putting people's name, you're going, Dear John, as opposed to like, it's...
Well, that's it, isn't it?
Like that, yeah, exactly. Personalized experience, that's the whole thing.
So, okay, so if you're pushing it further then, that isn't personalization. Well, it's like, what is that kind of end maturity of what you see that something is like, yeah, they've got it. This is great. What does that look like?
So I would rather you didn't know my name, but you got me what I wanted when I wanted it. So I like to say personalization is relevance by another name. So relevant means for me, you know, there's no such thing as relevant content. I can't point at a piece of content and say that it's relevant. It is by definition contextual. So your ability to understand my journeys, my objectives, and how I want to go about them, and have your information, data, content, services, products appear at the right time to help me move along my journey, that's personalized. And the closer you can get to giving me just what I want, the better. So I've had literally organizations who were doing, you know, website relaunches or even, you know, web and app, et cetera, like multi-channel relaunches. And they're all excited about the new analytics they're going to get. And I remember sitting there looking at a wireframe and it says download PDF. Because the page itself didn't have that much on it. I'm like, oh, so all right. So what they're really after is in the PDFs usually. They go, yeah. And I'm like, and how big could that PDF get in theory? You know, commonly speaking. And they go, 7,000 pages? And they're like, well, you know, average, you know, 800 to 1200, but you know, they can get up there. And I was going, all right, so your analytics is going to go user downloaded PDF. Yes. Like that's what, somewhere in that 7,000 pages was something that they wanted. And all you know is that they got that 7,000 pages.
Downloaded it. They got it. Maybe. Or maybe not scroll down that far.
Exactly. Or maybe that was the wrong one and they downloaded another one and you go, oh, look, they want them both. And so the closer you can get to actually pre-digesting the content, breaking it down into the right pieces for me and delivering them when at the time that's relevant for me, that's what we're talking about, omnichannel personalization. So it's a big lift. It requires data and content and design, all the things I just talked about, to come together in a way that most brands are just not doing right now.
Yeah. And I think this is where the kind of the value of Salesforce can kind of come in some ways. Like they've got the kind of experience cloud, but it's very tied to the CRM data. So you can kind of get that kind of personalization or relevance because you know the state of where they are at what point in time. As long as the data's good, it all comes down to the data, doesn't it? But also actually, as you're talking, I was kind of thinking, well, actually also it's on the kind of on the flip side of it within Salesforce as well, the user experience of looking at the customer and understanding, especially if it's not a kind of a website portal channel, you know, that one of those channels is the salesperson ringing the customer. Exactly. Yeah. Human beings, which are kind of, yeah, makes perfect sense, is another channel. It's not just email, text, portal, mobile, app. You know, you've got the human being element as well. So actually getting them the right information so they can actually talk to the customer or prospect that is relevant to them.
And it goes both ways. Like if it's a salesperson, how do I find the right person to reach out to? Or if I'm being kind of given this conversation. So as there often is in complex sales, there's a team working on this account. And I'm now being brought in to speak to this person who's already been speaking to this person for a month and what's happened, et cetera. So how do you distill the right amount of data in for me so that I can enter this conversation and pick it up and run with it? And that I'm adding value as fast as possible. You know, I see that all the time. Really stupid things like this person's in the database three times, or this company's in the database three times, or there's 20 pages of handwritten notes about this relationship, and I have a call tomorrow. Like, so what do I do? So we actually use the term human channels, and they are an audience, but they're also a channel, and they have to be part of the omnichannel strategy. So if, for example, if you're the architect and this is very often happens, as the business comes to you, they have a very possibly external view. And you go, well, okay, but how is this system that you're asking me to build going to be usable by the people who are going to make it actually work? Then there you have a huge opportunity to add value as an architect or an admin.
Yeah. And I think that's it. It's kind of like, yeah, it goes back to that thing of like knowing that real what they're trying to get out of it, so that you can really design a rich multi-channel experience that does add value and does...
Omnichannel.
Sorry, yeah. So what's the difference? Multi-channel versus omnichannel. So multi-channel is just saying there's lots of channels.
It's the customer centricity of the thinking. So you've actually done a strategy that is looking at that person. So I'll give you this example and you'll never mix them up again. So in multi-channel, I can buy on the phone or I can buy in the store or I can buy in the app, et cetera. I can buy on my desktop. I can buy by mail. In omni-channel, you've thought they're sitting on the TV, they see an ad. They look for information on that product on their phone. They decide to walk into the store. There's signage and there's information about that product to direct them to it in the store about the promotions that they've seen an advertisement for. With their phone in their hand, looking at a competitor's product, they walk up to a sales representative and they ask the question. And the sales representative picks up their phone and goes, let me look that up for you. That's omnichannel. How do all of those channels add up to success and a good customer experience? Not how does any one of them operate individually. They have to be considered in the whole, because out there in the wild, in the reality, we don't use one channel at a time. We don't even notice that we're engaging with two or three channels simultaneously.
So you have been in like the omni-channel world, yeah, as you said, like decades. Well, a long time.
Well, since I was in the multi-channel world and then I've been pushing on to omni-channel.
Yeah, and you've actually got a conference that you run as well. Over the last couple of years called Omnichannel X. Can you say a bit about that?
Yes, omnichannelx.digital. So we're one of the few digital domains. So Omnichannel X is, yes, it is conference, or I should say was a conference. Yeah, we did it for 4 years, very happily, had some very engaged people. It was kind of like the unconference. So we literally said, this conference is not for you. Because I used to go to all these conferences and we would get together and it was like the Salesforce conference, or it was like the, you know, CRM architect conference, or it was the content strategy conference or the UX designer conference. And we would all get these conferences and we would often talk about being customer centric. And then I would go, everybody in this room has the same job title. We would get together in our silos and optimize to be a better insert job title here, but we would never get together in one place as teams, like cross-functionally, and say, how are we going to pull this off, people, together? And so that's, so we did a conference that was omnichannel. We got people together that were coming in from different perspectives. So we would have CRM presentations and content management presentations. And the reason I'm talking in past tense is because we actually decided not to do this year's conference. We canceled right after the call for speakers closed because we'd only sold a few tickets. It was early enough, like we hadn't started marketing properly anyway. We hadn't signed up any sponsors yet. So we killed it this year because we decided people, although, you know, I'm not trying to poop on anyone's online conferences, we wanted to do more things like this. We wanted to do more things that weren't behind a paywall, that were regularly accessible, that were on demand, that people could get continuous learning all year round, as opposed to only the people who can pay once a year. And then always kind of be saying, oh, yeah, we should really pay some attention to the podcast, or we should really work, fix our CRM and get our communication strategy better. Because we were putting all our eggs in the conference basket and everything else, all our other channels were secondary. And we realized that a lot of people were saying, probably half were saying they don't really dig online conferences that much. So why were we killing ourselves to do this in a way that wasn't making our whole audience happy? And also restricting us so much to this kind of annual format. So we decided to pivot to focus on the podcast articles, definitely webinars, and maybe some local online events or some occasional paid stuff, but need more continuous resource. I think that's going to make everybody involved happier. So we're quite excited about it.
Oh, cool. So if people wanted to learn more about that, where would they go? Is it the same site?
Yeah, so it's omnichannelx.digital. We are just transitioning because we announced, I think, 2 weeks ago that we were not doing the conference. So we're now away in our hidey holes working hard on what our editorial calendar is going to look like for the next year. But we're really trying to support, for example, pharmaceutical has been very interested in omnichannel lately. We work a lot in high tech and financial services and stuff like that. So we might start to do some themed stuff. So we're working on it. We just launched a podcast with IKEA, which was cool. Yeah. And we've got some good podcast guests lined up for the next year.
Brilliant. Okay. So the omnichannel bit, how, me as an architect, what are the kind of warning signs that I should look out for? If I think that people are saying, hey, we want to do omnichannel, but haven't got, that you need to ask questions. I think it's what I'm trying to get at. How can you kind of, what questions should you ask to kind of really figure out it isn't quite omnichannel and it is just multi-channel in a disguise or whatever it is?
Yeah, or some half-baked personalization strategy.
Yeah.
Because they might just be web. Like, we still, although I work in omnichannel mainly, the vast majority of the content world, when they say content management system, they mean website. So it can just be web. It can be the one channel, but personalization is the same thing. It comes back to this idea of, have you understood the customer's journey and how are you going to dose in the right amount of content at the right time? So even if you're sending me a 3-page PDF, could you get it down to 1 page? You know, could you get, rather than send me a PDF that is going to load crappily on the phone, could you send me that content in a web format? So I think that whenever you're kind of brought these words, they aren't making clear how they're going to measure the journey. How do we know that the person is advancing along? Exactly. So like, where's point A? Where's point B? Like, what is the process we're trying to support? And what are the measurement points along the way?
Yeah. And I think that's, yeah, because we very much think in the process world because it's Salesforce, you know, but it's interesting. It's, yeah, it's you're connecting that. I kind of call it the Salesforce value chain, where it kind of starts off in marketing, goes into lead qualification, sales process, post sale support, and all that kind of jazz. But you've got this kind of the whole stream through, but then it's okay across those channels. What is that omni-channel experience that they're getting all the way through that? And how is it customized based on their segmentation and where they're from?
Absolutely, exactly that. And if you want to go really sophisticated and really want to impress people, what are the customer use cases? Because what you just described of the sales journey, I don't even call that a journey. I don't use the term because I don't want to mix them up. I use the term customer lifecycle. So there are phases of the customer lifecycle: lead, contact, whatever, pipeline, whatever your terminology is, whether it's 3 or 7. Basically, they often come to you with the idea, okay, I don't know this person, I want them to be, give me money is the middle, and then sing my praises is the end. And so how do we just shove them along that as fast as possible? And if you can say, well, these people, you know, whether you're a consultant like me or a consultant like you or your listeners, what we're trying to do is make that end customer happy at the end of the day. That's when we've kind of done a great job, is when we've helped that relationship get better. So are the people who are asking you to do X, have they actually got a good description of what the use cases or what I actually call customer journeys are? Like, what are their objectives? What are the people who are going to engage in the different points, whether they're the human channels or whether the end audience, what are they trying to do? Like, what are their objectives? What are their drivers? What does their process look like? Because if you look at the customer through the lens always of lead, you know, prospect, sale, you know, upsell, cross grade, like if you just box people out like that, you often miss their actual process. And so like, that's where you make the bonehead errors, which we see as customers, we see it all the time. So like, when you make the errors, like you treat me when I have a pre-sales query, exactly as you would treat a support query, because they all go in the queries bucket, or vice versa. Like, I've been a customer for 10 years and I have a query, and you treat me like you've never spoken to me before. Companies do it wrong in all the different ways, but it's because of that kind of thinking, because they're not actually going, well, who is this person? What kind of relationship and past do we have together? And why are they contacting us today? What's the objective of this? And so how can we aid them? Do you use the term customer effort score in your community much? You know, Net Promoter. Yeah, so Net Promoter, NPS, that was like the big thing for years. It's starting to give way to what we call customer effort score, where rather than the goal being, will you tell your friends about us? The goal is, did we make your job easier? Was this higher, like when you were trying to buy the ticket or register for the course or you know, learn more about your new prescription drug, whatever your objective was, did we make it easier for you? Or is it less effort? How effortful was this? That they've, Gartner and McKinsey, they've all shown that that's actually far more predictive of customer loyalty than customer satisfaction or Net Promoter. Because you can delight me, or I can think you know, you're a great company and everything, but that's not, it just doesn't have the same thing as, I like you, you're trying hard, but you save me time. You empower me. That's really what makes people loyal. They can, especially if you're checking like right after a campaign or right after something and they go, oh yeah, you were great. That's different than helping them finish the task. Get me across the finish line. that is will get you customer loyalty. So that's something that we look at a lot. So if you can bring that kind of perspective into your project and push back and go, well, what are they trying to do? And how is this going to help them? And how does that map to our world of sales, you know, pipeline, lead, advocate, whatever our terms are, our customer lifecycle that we're trying to put them through, how does their task map to that?
And also their experience. Yeah, because actually I was doing a project a while back and they'd kind of worked out that, you know, the experience of somebody that is running a startup company and they're trying to sell to them versus a more established company is very different. You know, they're short of time as a startup. They're wanting to access it there and then because they've got 2 minutes to quickly do something versus the larger that maybe have more time to talk on a call and stuff like this and do it during business hours.
Exactly. They can do a 30-day trial because they actually have someone who's there going to sit there and try it for 30 days. As opposed to the rest of us who sign up for a 30-day trial and on the day 29 go, damn it, I downloaded that thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and the other thing I would want to just slip in here, which I think is really relevant for the crossover when people are coming to talk about personalization or omnichannel or content, is the metadata and data arc. Because we're talking all the time about tools like using machine learning and artificial intelligence to auto tag content. But now we're looking at, could I use the same tagging? Like I can say probably on your podcast, I can say words like taxonomy and ontology. And if your audience doesn't know them, they should go learn about them. So can I use the same tagging taxonomies and the same relationship ontologies that I use to tag all of the content to tag the notes that people are putting into the call, like the call logs? So can I get the system to use artificial intelligence to structure the unstructured content that's in Salesforce, map that to the content that we have as content and make them more meet in the middle, try to add more structure to everything? Because, you know, the more structure and the more cat tagging and categorizing we have, the more we can automate, the more we can do analysis and insights, the better we can report. So that's a really good thing when those two worlds can come together and they're thought of, like the architect has thought, okay, well, I'm architecting Salesforce, but there's going to be some content repository somewhere that's going to have a tagging architecture. How do these marry up? Like that, that's a big hole I've seen people step in.
Interesting. Yeah. And also the unstructured data coming in, well, how is it processed or tagged? Is it offloaded? Is it done on the platform? Is it, you know, and how do they marry? Yeah. How do the two marry up?
Oh, I got a great tip. So if you can point out to people, like they're like people in my world in the content marketing communications, that kind of world. It's not all marketing, but like the content people, they're not the database people. If you can point out to them, they might be going crazy for SEO and crazy for search engine logs and like looking at what people put into the search box on the site, on Google, etc. If you can point out that if they ask their question via chat or via a human channel or via email, you can get so much more information out of them. They'll give you 600 words to explain what they want, where they're at, what their interests are, what their pain points are, instead of you like reading the tea leaves.
Yeah, of a couple of keywords, yeah.
Yeah, I lie. Okay, so like the 6 or 7, maybe 8 words they would put in a search engine, max, and you have to kind of interpret that. Think about how much more actual insight you could get if you married those other channels of other rich, semantically rich sources of questions. And started to analyze those to understand what you should do with your content. You'll have a lot of people go,
yeah, that's fascinating. That's so cool. Wow. Is there anything else? Any questions we haven't? I'm just, it's been really interesting.
Yeah, okay. So we auto-tag the content, we auto-tag the customer queries, and we auto-tag the user notes. So those places, let's all meet in the middle and deliver some great relevant experiences.
That's cool. Do you have any questions? Do you want, or anything else you're not going to bring up?
Will you come on my podcast?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh yeah, I would love that. I would love that. Yeah, and no, I have probably lots of questions. You know, if I could go back and give myself advice, I would.
Okay, well, why don't we go there? If you could, I always ask it for everybody on the podcast. If you could turn the clock back to a point in time and give yourself some advice, what time would it be and what advice would you give?
Yeah, so I know very well. So I've been in the business now a little more than half my life. So we're going back 23 years. And I remember when I was a young techie and trying to get, and also just, especially young techie starting to interact more with this business people. So they They started taking me out on sales calls and having me train people. They started giving me more exposure to the client. I was really excited about showing how clever I was. I wanted to show people how much I knew and all the things and et cetera. And well, the advice I would give myself is that it's more valuable to you to be humble and listen carefully than it is to impress. And you'll probably be able to show off your own talents more effectively if you take more time to actually listen and respect the difference of perspective and input that other people have.
Yeah, because it's always, yeah, cultures, companies, industries, it's so diverse and being able to listen.
I would have learned so much more and so much faster if I had talked a little less. I'm sorry, and you were saying? Okay, now we're on the same page.
I just, when I was in Denmark, I did, I talked at the architect community group and I did 10 habits that highly successful architects, traits of highly successful architects, I think it was. And actually, my first one was listening.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was being able to listen and understand. And yeah, such a key kind of skill to have. And also from that listening, how to ask the right questions, which is always, again, another tricky.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to having you on the podcast. If people want to hook up, LinkedIn is the best place to get in touch with me. OmnichannelX.digital is the website. UrbinaConsulting.com is our site, although we're in the middle of relaunching it. You definitely can take a look. I don't know if there's anything else. Yeah, I think that's all the stuff.
That's all. Well, thank you so much. It's been really fascinating to jump into the world. So yeah, and hope to see you soon.
Thank you for having me. Have a good one.
See ya.
Thanks for watching or listening to the Salesforce Posse podcast. Now, please, 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 if you like or what you see or hear, then please rate this podcast in your podcast player, as it tells me that there are people out there that actually are listening to this and that it's useful to them. Also, it helps the podcast algorithms to kind of elevate the podcast in the different podcast directories, which will be really helpful for me as well. And finally, if you do have a question that you want to ask on the podcast, then head to salesforceposse.com/message and maybe you'll appear in the next podcast. But apart from that, thanks for listening, and until next time, ta-ta!